Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast, a part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my co-host, Jack Smith. Jack, I got to ask you, you're not going on any of the other podcasts. You didn't do instant analysis. What did you think of the spring game?
I have mixed feelings on the spring game. I think it's cool to be out there in the Coliseum. It's nice to get to see some spring football with fans watching. I do think it's pretty stupid, and the format that they have chosen makes basically zero sense to me. I mean, there's no real tackling. They stop the clock when they want. They'll add extra drives. So whatever format they do tell you switches up every now and then. So it was fun to be out in the Coliseum. It's cool to see some of these new players in the Cardinal and Gold. It's not football.
It's not football. Whoa. It is definitely.
There wasn't real tackling.
Yeah, that didn't make much sense. Actually, I talked about this earlier in the week on the Helium Boys podcast. The thing that baffled me the most is that some guys were thudding, some guys were playing two-hand touch, and some guys were actually tackling. Like, some of the second-string guys and the walk-ons were like, I'm getting my chance, I'm going to hit somebody. And so it made no sense. Like, there was no rhyme or reason of how it was actually going about. It was very confusing as to how that was all going down. And I didn't really understand it. I know you're going in and it's just another practice, really. That's how everyone is treating spring showcases now, basically. There's not true offense versus defense. And part of it is so many guys are in the transfer portal or in and out, and you don't have the depth of the roster that you once had. But it's disappointing not to be able to have it, and it didn't make much sense. Like, why are you not tackling? Are you so banged up that you can't do it? You want guys like Christian Pierce to be able to play out there, sure, but like, he's the only guy that was in the yellow jersey, or maybe one other guy. But like, it didn't really make much sense why you're not practicing something you were so bad at last year.
And the moment when I realized that the whole thing was flawed is when the referees would look at each other. Where are we marking this guy down? Was it at the line of scrimmage where he was touched? Was it, 10 yards past that? And there was also a point where Amarion Peterson got touched, and so the defense let up because they thought he was down and just trucked someone over. And it's like, he's like, I don't care, I'm not playing by these rules. And it's like, how is that keeping guys safe if your running back's just going to truck a defender over when he thinks the play's done? That seems more unsafe to me.
Well, he was going against the second and third string guys, so doesn't really matter. You're allowed to run those guys over. That's the rules in practice. I don't know if you know this or not. You can hit walk-ons and stuff when you're not supposed to. At least that's how it was in high school as a receiver, and I didn't play any defense, so our middle linebacker always tried to pick on me during scout team portions and stuff and hit me after the whistle and stuff. We had some good back and forth there. But Jack, enough about football. We're here to talk about baseball. That's what we do here on the Dado Download podcast. We talk about the USC Trojans baseball program, a team that had a ton of momentum And it just hit the brick wall. It feels like this past weekend, two losses to Sacramento State, a team, you know, in the high 170s, I want to say, in RPI, was in the 190s coming into the week. A team that USC could not afford to lose to, and pretty much put a nail in the coffin to their RPI at large hopes. Now, it was still a long shot. They had to do a lot of work still. But it's one thing if you lose to Arizona or you lose to Oregon the weekend prior and you lose two games to them, a quality team that's at the top of the standings. Completely different when you lose to a WAC team. And I don't mean that just because they're WAC. I'm saying that because they're in the Western Athletic Conference. You can't lose to a team like that. USC has struggled against the WAC this season. They lost to Grand Canyon. They lost to Cal Baptist. And now two losses to Sacramento State. I think they're 0-4 on the season. I don't know if there's another game in there. I checked the schedule. But that's going to kill them. Those four games, along with a loss to Loyola Marymount, are five games that are destroying their RPI. Now, obviously, they're, 17-19 or whatever it is. The record's not great. So it's not like there's not other losses you can point to. 19-21 now. But the games of the WAC are ones you're definitely going to point at the end of the season and be like, those could have been, you know, those are big turning points as far as your resume and stuff. But we're going to still break it down. We're here. You know, what's your takeaway from this week? Do you feel like they just ran out of gas, some exhaustion of you know, have so much pressure? What's your overall take on a week where USC goes 2-3, start off the week splitting a pair of midweeks, San Diego, UC Irvine? You take that result, but then you have to win the weekend and they don't do it.
Yeah, I thought it was just really interesting because we talked last week about the weekend at Oregon. And the last time I had seen this team play in person was when they put it on UC Irvine after sweeping Washington. They had gotten back to 500, or not even back to 500. They had gotten to 500 for the first time all season, dug themselves completely out of the 3-11 start that they had to kind of start right back there at 0-0. They had a fresh, clean slate to try and go up from 500 and stack wins to try and make their record look a little bit better. And we mentioned that it was a tough weekend at Oregon, but then they came back home. I was there on Tuesday against San Diego. It just looked like the team from the beginning of the season again. Like it looked like the team that we saw beat up UCI, that rattled off six straight wins, I believe, up to that point. Maybe it was just five straight wins. It looked like that team just disappeared, like they left it at PK Park in Oregon because they couldn't get a hit with a runner in scoring position, and they just couldn't get anything done, and they end up losing 3-2, which is kind of a very similar score that we had at the beginning of the season when they just couldn't get that one big hit. Then I'm not in person for the game against UC Irvine. When they play him again in a rematch, that one was at Cicerone Field, and they put it on him again. They have a season high at 16 hits. It just, throughout the entire week, this team couldn't figure out what its identity was. Was it a team that was going to hit almost 20 hits a game, or a team that was going to score 2-3 runs? And I just saw such a stark contrast from the team that played UC Irvine 2 weeks ago that had rattled off five straight wins to get to 500. A completely different team this week that looked a lot more like the team at the start of the season than the team that, you know, I had seen before they got whisked away to Oregon.
Yeah, the inconsistency is the biggest thing. You know, good one game, bad the next game, clutch hitting one game, no clutch at all the next game, pitchers throwing strikes one game, no one throwing strikes the next game, just up and down. It was a roller coaster week. USC goes 2-3. Let's recap that real quick. They start off the week with a 3-2 loss to San Diego. As you mentioned, just, you know, one of those games that felt like the beginning of the season. No one could get a hit when it mattered. They had opportunities, couldn't make it happen, but then they respond. Apparently there's something about UC Irvine or Cicerone Field because USC is now 2-0 against the Eaters, 2-0 against Oregon State at Cicerone Field. So those four games, you got four top 20 wins. If you want to break it down a little bit more, you got three of those are top 15 wins. Break it down a little bit more. Two of those are top two wins because when they played Oregon State, they were top two in the country. So, you know, just outstanding wins. Those are the resume patterns, but apparently they needed to play Sacramento State at Cicerone Field instead of at Great Park. I mean, they got to start playing the WAC at UC Irvine's field because that's the difference maker. Those are the games, those Irvine and Oregon State games are supposed to be the ones to hang your hat on the resume. And instead, They're anomalies, it feels like. And so whatever it is about that field, they've hit really well there. They see the ball great there. You know, they put up a massive number on Oregon State in one of those wins against them. Both the games against Irvine, they scored really well. And so you think, okay, the San Diego loss was a blip. They bounced back. They should go on the weekend. They can take care of business, and it'll end up being a good week. If you go 4-1 with a loss to San Diego, that's not a bad week. San Diego is a quality team. They're, you know, pretty high up there in the RPI. They've won something like, I think it's now 14 of 16 or something like that. They have two losses in there. They lost a series to Portland on the road. Tough place to play. Other than that, they've been red hot. So turn it on against Irvine. Great. Then they go in the weekend against Sacramento State. They lose to Sacramento State 6-3. They are gifted a game against Santa Clara. Santa Clara gave them so many chances in that. They do find a way to win. Give them credit there. 12-11. Made it interesting at the end. And then they got some opportunities against Sacramento State. They were gifted as well on Sunday. They still can't find a way to win. They lose 5-4. A couple of big opportunities in both the San Diego game and the Sacramento State, the two bookend games for the week, that they just couldn't get that big hit. So opportunities that they couldn't capitalize on. Where do we go from here, Zach? You know, looking at this week, what stands out to you? What's the game you wanna pinpoint here?
I mean, you mentioned the inconsistency, which was like kind of my number one big takeaway for the week. But I feel like the blueprint for USC as a losing team was set on Tuesday in that game against San Diego. Like, I think that they played Sacramento State like they played San Diego, and it's no secret that they lost those three games, and it could be the reason why. The hitting with the runners in scoring position thing was such a big problem. I'm pretty sure they were 1-for-12 in that Tuesday game against San Diego. They could not buy a hit with a runner in scoring position. They only score two runs, and they waste what was a really good pitching effort, which I think you could say about the Friday loss to Sacramento State, and you could say about the Sunday loss to Sacramento State. And you can't have an offensive performance like that to start a week and to finish a week when you're playing five games in 6 days with your Friday starter missing the last couple weeks and a pitching staff that's already been depleted through 40 games of the season. If you're only giving up three runs, you have to win in college baseball, especially in a week like this where we knew the pitching staff was going to be taxed and we knew they were going to be tired. They showed up, and the offense in the three losses just couldn't this week.
Yeah, the San Diego game, the thing that when they've been going good is they've taken advantage when teams have given them extra outs, whether or extra bases, either one. Whether it's an error and gives you an extra out, or you get a free pass, you get a walk, you know, an overthrow or a bounce away that gives you an extra base, you're aggressive. The sixth inning of that San Diego game, they're down 3-1. But you got 12 outs to play with. You're getting into the bullpen. And now San Diego has some good bullpen arms. But you get into those middle innings of the bullpen. They had used Ivan Romero, and he's one of their quality backing guys, but he has to pitch for them during the midweeks and stuff. They get him out of the game. So sixth inning, single, walk, walk to open the inning. You're thinking, all right, here it is. Here's the opportunity to get back in the game, at least tie it. You know, you get two runs in. When you get the bases loaded with no outs, you should score at least two runs. That's always been my opinion. You got to at least score two runs. Anything less, you feel like it's a disappointment for the inning. You're happy to get one run, but you're still disappointed that you didn't do more. And that's exactly what they do. Alex Schreier comes in, older brother of UCLA shortstop Cody Schreier, and gets Chris Brown to ground it to a double play. And then the next one is a ground out as well. USC gets one run on that, but that double play was huge. And you and I are texting during this game and go, I would have pinch hit for Chris Brown there. Chris Brown has struggled all season. You give him an opportunity to start in this game. The first two at bats, he puts, you know, the big thing for him has just been he hadn't put the ball in play. He put the ball in play, but it's not like he made hard contact on the two. I think they were both ground outs his first two at bats. And he's not a fast runner. So the fact that he's made contact but put it on the ground both times, I would be leery of the double play in particular. I would have went with someone else at that point. And this, maybe that's JT Walton. He's a guy that lifts the ball and puts the ball in the air. Maybe it's someone else. But that one definitely stood out to me as something, as we're watching the game, we're both like, this seems like an opportunity to pinch hit, and they didn't make a move, and it backfired on them.
Yeah, you and I have been so complimentary of Andy Stankiewicz, and we love having him on the show, and I think he has done a phenomenal job to bring this program to at least where it is in his first about 1 2/3 years heading the program. There are times where I maybe do question his in-game decisions, and you know, I'll be the first to admit it. He knows way more than me about managing a baseball team. You know, he has done this far longer than I have, and I've never been a manager. I've never sat in the dugout, written a lineup card, anything like that. But there are times where you know a move doesn't exactly pan out that I look at it, and I'm just like, objectively, I'm not sure I saw the vision for that one. And I think you look back to Tuesday and you mentioned the Chris Brown decision to leave him in there that didn't pay off for USC. The one that really stuck out to me the most is Garen Rizzo went through 4 2/3. He had given up 2 hits, 1 run. He had 2 outs in the 5th inning, and he's a freshman with a chance to finish the 5th for the first time in his career. He would have been a career high in innings pitched. He could have gotten in line for a win. Instead, with 2 outs and nobody on, Andy Stankiewicz goes to Mason Edwards. And so you're thinking, oh, it must have been a lefty coming up. He brought him in to face a righty with 2 outs, nobody on, and Rizzo's pitch count was in a fine spot. Then it went single, walk, triple to score 2 runs. And those 2 runs basically ended up being the difference. USC never came back after going down on that 2-run triple. And I just sat there and I thought about it for a couple innings. And I was like, I just didn't really understand why that move was made in that scenario. And maybe it was that Rizzo was tired and, you know, he is a freshman that is making his 4th straight midweek start. Maybe he was tired. I think the second out of that inning was hit pretty hard. So maybe Andy Stankiewicz wanted to end it on a positive note and kind of get him out of there before any potential damage came. But it's a move like that kind of defined the game. And it was one that I just didn't really understand.
Yeah, and he was facing the 9-hole hitter there, Gabe Darcy. So I probably would have given him one more batter, and then I don't want him facing the lineup the third time through. So I would have given him one more batter, and maybe that's also partially, hey, let's get Mason Edwards in there for 1 out and give him confidence before he faces the top of the lineup. So, you know, again, these are things that these are post-game questions you would normally ask. But, you know, of course, we don't get to talk to them every game afterwards and whatnot. So that game is defined in that middle section. You mentioned the 5th inning there. They score 2 runs, take the lead. It's 3-1. We mentioned the 6th inning where they ground into a double play, only get 1 run. So it's 3-2, but USC gets another chance in the 7th. Infield single. Give Avery Covarrubias credit for hustling on, I think it was a jump throw the second baseman tried and beats it out. Another infield single. Austin O'Vern is just super fast. I think it was a high chopper, if I remember correctly. And they try to bunt with Ryan Jackson, which I do not disagree with. I'm fine with. Even though Ryan Jackson's been pretty hot, so I could see it either way. You're down by 1 run, you know, no outs. Put 2 fast guys in scoring position for Jacob Galloway, who's been your best hitter all season, and Ethan Hedges, who's probably your best hitter right now as your hottest hitter. And that makes complete sense to me. Unfortunately, Ryan Jackson doesn't get the bunt down, and he tries to swing, and he swings at a pitch way out of the zone, and he strikes out. Jacob Galloway then grounds out, does move the runners up, so you still have an opportunity. Ethan Hedges, they pitch around him, basically walk him, and Kevin Takeuchi grounds out in the inning. So again, bases loaded, and this time you get nothing. After having 2 runners on, 2 fast guys on, and you're just not able to get anything done. Like those 3 innings define that game right there. You mentioned the pitching change, not pinch hitting, and then suddenly, you know, the 7th inning, they have another opportunity with the heart of the order, and no one clutches up. And that defined that game completely. So USC loses that one 3-2, but they bounce back. They beat up on Irvine. Like they're up, 8-1, 10-1 early in that by midway through that game. So that one was over. Like the fact that they were able to get some guys some opportunities, get some guys some at-bats and whatnot. That's always a positive. Got some innings for some guys that hadn't pitched a ton, Channing Austin. You know, they still relied on some of their key guys because they wanted to make sure that they put away Irvine. And I thought Eric Hammond did a good enough job there. You know, it wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. But you get 2 innings out of him after Ebner was really good to start the game. So you go into the weekend, I feel like there's confidence in this team. You know, they bounced back and they got this big win over Irvine, another ranked win. And then it's a tight game throughout on Friday. It ends up being 6-3, but it is a 4-3 game until the ninth inning. And again, no clutch. Just not finding ways to get a hit. And it usually, as has been kind of the case this season, it was in the late innings. So, you know, they get an opportunity. Fifth inning, they get a run to take the lead. But then they give it right back with a two-out error. Throw an error on the third baseman. I don't remember the play exactly. Do you remember this one? They kind of started.
Yeah, it was a one hop in the dirt that Carpentier didn't really, you know, scoop very well. I don't think it was a terrible throw, especially from deep third. It was maybe a little bit too far into the short hop category, not a long hop. But again, like, USC's got a high school middle infielder at first base, and Dean Carpentier, I think, has done a great job. Shotgun, you and I have watched a lot of USC baseball, and I came away from that game thinking, how many times have we had to see a first baseman scoop a ball? I feel like it hasn't been very often this year. The throws have been relatively good, but you know, sometimes this happens when you've got guys that maybe aren't playing out of position, but they're not playing their natural positions.
Yeah, and so that turns into inning continues. Now there's a runner in scoring position, but it doesn't matter. The next hitter unloads on a pitch on an 0-2 pitch. That's what stood out to me in that inning. They give up a 3-run bomb on an 0-2 pitch. You can't do that. Like, that's a cardinal sin as a pitcher to give up something on an 0-2. And it looked like it was pretty much a fat pitch right down the middle. And give credit to the Sacramento State hitter Bird, who put it over the fence against Stromsborg. Stromsborg, you take away that one pitch, and it was a fantastic outing. Fantastic. But that one pitch completely changes the entire dynamic. You know, so he gives up 4 runs in 5 2/3. If they make the play on the ball to third, he's through 6 innings, only giving up 1 run. You feel really excited about, you know, how that sets you up for the rest of the weekend, as well as the confidence builder is for him to have multiple, you know, strong outings back to back to back. But then USC has a couple chances late. The seventh inning, they get a run back. You walk, they steal. Runner goes to third on a bad throw. Dean Carpentier comes through, base hit. They get another single by Covarrubias, and they get runners at second and third. Austin O'Vern up, and he strikes out swinging. And so this was the thing. It wasn't one guy like, oh, there's just one guy was struggling this weekend. And he just came up in the wrong spots. It was all of their guys. The guys are supposed to make the big impact, all had a part in, you know, them just not clutching up. So Austin O'Vern strikes out in the seventh inning. So USC's trailing by a run the entire game. They don't really do anything the rest of the game. A couple of runs for Sacramento State in the ninth against Jared Fikus, makes it a 6-3 game versus a 4-3 game. But, you know, that game was decided in that seventh inning. Similar, and that's what we've seen a lot of times for this team. It's not being decided in the ninth inning. It's being decided in the sixth and seventh a lot of times, because that's not an opposing team's closer. It's not their best arm. That's the guy you got to be able to attack and get the big hits against, and they don't do that. The Sacramento State game, you called this one right? I mean,
I called the two Sac States, not the Santa Clara of the spring game.
So the Santa Clara game was wild, just back and forth. Crazy. This felt a lot like the Oregon game where it was pouring down rain that I was at last weekend. Just because there are 5 errors in this game. There were a ton of hits, a ton of runs. You know, USC walked 9 batters as well. They hit 3 more, so 12 free passes. That was the difference in this USC just controlling this game the entire time. But they give them credit for the fact that they rallied back. They got some help from Santa Clara, but they beat Blake Hammond, who is one of, if not Santa Clara's best best pitchers. He's got a nasty, nasty curveball that's basically unhittable when it's on. It was not on in this game. So USC is able to get some hits. They're able to get some runs. They rally to win this game. After being down 10-5, they find a way to outscore them. And the crazy thing is USC – gets it to a 1-run game. They tie the game up, and they immediately give it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt like, oh, here they go again. They're going to find a way to lose this. And I give them credit for finding a way to win. Dean Carpentier comes through with a couple of big hits in this one. He had a two-run double down the left field line. He ends up having the game-winning squeeze bunt. You know, they go safety squeeze and are able to win that one. So they do it a little bit different way that time, but they find a way to win. And they, okay, you can get out of the week with a winning record, 3-2. The loss to Sacramento State is terrible for your RPI, but you can build some more momentum and confidence going into this upcoming week. And instead, on Sunday, it just doesn't happen. Just nothing came together. They had opportunities again, but they were trailing early. They gave a three spot in the fourth inning, and then they just were fighting to get back in it, and they would get close. But you know, they get a run in the fourth. They get two runs in the fifth. Okay, down by a run, immediately give up another run. The lack of a shutdown inning there was huge. They get a run the seventh, but can't fully capitalize. And so they end up falling to Sacramento State. Again, Sacramento State is a good program, but they're a little bit down this year. And it's a team you can't lose to at this time of the year. You have to be able to find a way to get the wins. You have to show that you're a Power Five conference and they're in the WAC. I mean, it's as simple as that. And USC wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, it just felt like this team couldn't decide whether it was the clutch one that won games to stave off the season ending, or it was going to, you know, just falter against these teams that USC is definitely better than. Like, San Diego's having a great year. USC should beat San Diego on its home turf on a Tuesday midweek game, not lose 2-3 and get relatively blanked by the Toreros. Like, it just couldn't. Felt like the team couldn't decide whether it had it or it didn't have it during a game. And I give credit a lot to Sacramento State. I mean, it is a team that is having a down year, but I believe they've, you know, only lost two games in the last couple of weeks, and one was to Oregon and one was to Stanford, both teams that are pretty hot right now. But it's like the other teams got that one hit. San Diego hit that triple off of Mason Edwards to score the two runs and to win the game. Sacramento State on Friday hit that home run off Tyler Stromsburg. They capitalized in an 0-2 count. They made USC pay for the error. Then they add on in the ninth too to really put things out of reach. Santa Clara couldn't do it. I don't want to gloss over the two wins for USC this week, but I think those are, it's easier to focus on the losses for a team that we think should be winning more games than it loses right now. And then Sacramento State on Friday, they capitalized with the three spot. They're able to put up a crooked number, and then they're the ones that are able to get the out with a tying run at third in the ninth inning with a strikeout of Ethan Hedges. USC is the team that can't get that run across. And if you remember in that one too, on Sunday, Santa Clara or Sacramento State added an insurance run late in the game. That put it, you know, that one run ended up being the difference. So it just felt like USC, against some of these lesser teams that we have agreed they should be beating right now, just couldn't really figure it out, didn't have it. And at this point in the season, Chuck, and they needed to play relatively perfectly, and a week like this, it kind of does really sink the season.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sacramento State was able to add that insurance run. They were able to get the big hit when needed. The insurance run, walk, two-out hit. You know, you're mm-hmm. you're hurting yourself there. The fourth inning, when they scored three runs, it was two outs. There was three straight hits with two outs to get those. USC did not clutch up with two outs in particular this week. And like you mentioned, they had a chance on the ninth to even it up. Takeuchi gets on, walks, gets the second, moves to third. Think, all right, all it needs is a pass ball, and you know, a wild pitch, you know, something to get them a blooper, a bleeder. Instead, they get a strikeout. Got to put the ball in play, force the defense, you know, put the pressure on them, and weren't able to do that. So let's see what your three up, three down are. Let's start with a three up. Let's give me some positives. What were your positives from this week?
One of them, I'm going to just piggyback off of our guest from last week. We talked a lot with Austin O'Vern about how positive it is for the team when he gets on base. I thought he had a really great week getting on base. They played five games. He hit leadoff in all five games. Two hits and a walk on Tuesday. Three hits on Wednesday, two hits Friday, two hits Saturday. He did go 0-for-4 on Sunday, but he walked once. The problem I think I saw on Sunday is he knew it was a close game. He knew they hadn't been clutching up over the weekend all that much. He was taking much bigger swings. It was pretty evident that there was more loop in his swing. He flew out, I think, three times to left field and popped up to the third baseman, which is kind of what we've seen from him at times where he's not getting his best swing off. But overall on the week, you know, multi-hit games in four of the five, it was a great week for Austin O'Vern at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, he scored in the first four of those games, did not score in the Sunday game, but you know, he's on base. He's causing some havoc when he does get on base. And when he goes, they go. That's been the case the entire time. I would say a guy that has followed his track this season is Ethan Hedges. Austin O'Vernon started going. It was kind of slowly creeping along. It's gotten really going now. Ethan Hedges recently, he's got a hitting streak. It's now 12 games long outside of that strikeout in the Saturday or Sunday game. He's been really good for them, coming through with clutch hits and stuff. He's using his speed. He's gotten multiple infield singles and stuff throughout it. It's not like he's just crushing the ball necessarily, but he's finding ways to get on base. So, he's the guy that I got in my three up.
Yeah, I think Ethan Hedges has been over the past 2 or 3 weeks now, especially with Jacob Galloway struggling a little bit, which is, it's going to happen at some point during the season. And for Galloway, it's just the first time it's been happening. I think Hedges is the best hitter in the lineup, at least as of late. My second three up, I want to highlight a freshman who quietly shotguns up to hitting 312, and that's not just a conference number. Kevin Takeuchi's hitting 312 now on the season, and I think you only have to look back a week or two to see his average down at 265. It was at 246 back at the end of March, and basically in a month he's raised his average 70 points. He had three different three-hit games this week, one against UC Irvine, he did it against Santa Clara, he also did it against Sacramento State. So Kevin Takeuchi is a guy that's been swinging a hotter bat. He has shown the ability to slug all season. Like, half of his hits are extra base hits, but this week he really put it on and started to raise that average. And when he gets on base too, it helps in the middle of that order, similarly to what we've talked about with O'Vern and Hedges and Jackson. He is really cementing himself as a guy that USC needs to have in the lineup every single day.
Yeah, another freshman, I don't necessarily have him on here, but Dean Carpentier is also, been hitting really well, getting base hits. He had hits in four of the five games this past week. So those freshmen have really proven themselves and showed that, hey, they should be in the lineup. And you wondered how this, at the beginning of the season, when's the transition happen of the freshmen, the guys that the coaching staff actually brought in versus the guys that were already on the roster when they got here. There weren't a ton of guys brought in last season. There were a couple of transfers and stuff, but most of those were older guys that have already moved on. But you look at them and you go, okay, when do they start wanting their guys to get in the lineup? And I think that was forced a lot sooner just because some of the guys that didn't produce early in the season, DePaulo and Chris Brown and some of those other guys. But those freshmen have taken the reins and the future looks pretty bright, with those guys and what they could become down the line. I got three up. One of mine is experimentation because, yes, we've seen those freshmen in there, but we're also seeing Riley Hunsaker in there. We're seeing Gavin Mez get his first start. You see an Andrew Lamb in there. Connor Cliff got a start. Like, it just seems like you're trying to find something. And whether that's because of their inconsistency or guys are doing something really well in BP, I don't know, but it's just like, it feels like they're experimenting and trying out and continuing to try to press the right buttons, try to do something different to get a different result.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw Connor Clifton there on Sunday because they wanted to give Jacob Galloway a day off, and he had been really slumping, and then they eventually brought him in as a pinch hitter. I thought he struck the ball pretty well, but it was just a really nice play by the Sac State center fielder. I definitely agree that experimentation is a good thing. I did view it a little bit as Andy Stankiewicz maybe saying, hey, we've got a non-conference weekend this weekend. These aren't the best teams we're going to be playing this year. This is a chance to see what we have with some of these guys. Talking about starting at Chris Brown again on a Tuesday, giving Gavin Mez his first start of the season on a Friday. While I think that's good and it's great to see what you have in guys, if you're going to do it, you got to win the games, in my opinion. Like, if you're going to give Gavin Mez his first start of the year, I know he had a hit, you have to beat Sacramento State. You can't lose on a Friday. I think it does sour the experimentation a little bit, considering that USC lost three of the games it played this week. A lot of the games they did some experimentation. And you do wonder, hey, if you just stick with the lineup that has shown that it has been winning games as of late, prior to heading to Oregon, do you avoid a Friday loss? Do you avoid losing on Sunday or Tuesday? So I think you have to win the games if you're going to experiment. So I would maybe push back a little bit on it being a super huge positive. And maybe it was just,
I didn't say it was a positive or a negative. I just said experimentation was up. This is That's a three in a week where you don't play to your expectations. The three up doesn't necessarily mean they're all positive.
That's fair. Well, I guess then I would say experimentation certainly up. I'm not going to say it's a positive because you got to win the games, I think, if you're going to experiment. But, you know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, Carson Wells is a guy that we really haven't seen very much. He did pinch hit. At least that's what the box score says. I wasn't watching the game, but he pinch hit this weekend, which I thought he wasn't playing because he was hurt. So maybe he isn't playing because the coaching staff wants to see more from him. I know he went hitless in the series against Oregon after coming back from a hamstring injury, but you know, that's a guy that was hitting pretty well before he got hurt. So maybe he could be a guy that sees some more opportunities. You know, we don't know what's going on in the clubhouse, but you know, when there are losses and the lineups have been changed around a lot, that is something you could potentially point to.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. And maybe, you know, maybe there is a leg injury there with Carson Wells. And, you know, if you pinch hit, you're looking for a hit, not necessarily, you know, you can get a single and then pinch runner or whatever. Haven't got anything on that. Haven't asked around necessarily. But I'm okay with the experimentation because it's not like you're sitting Austin O'Vern. You know, you gave Jacob Galloway a game off, which, you know, he's deserved, and because he's scuffling right now. But it's not like you're sitting anyone who's been producing recently. So it's not like, to me, that doesn't say, oh, keep the lineup the same just because you're winning. Well, you're winning in spite of those guys, not because of them. So my last three up was the back end domination. Dominance from Xavier Martinez and Josh Blum. I mean, I was just looking at their stats. Josh Blum, it's been a month now since he allowed an earned run.
Yep.
So he's outstanding for one inning. You know, if you can get the ball to him with a lead, you feel really confident in it. And Xavier Martinez can give you two innings if you need him. And he's given up by the time this podcast comes out, then he will have gone a month with only giving up one earned run. So, we're just on the fine line of the last time he gave up a run, other than one run against Washington when he went an inning and two thirds. He's been outstanding as well. So those two guys in particular, I give you that confidence of just get it to the seventh with a lead, and we got this. Problem is, you're not getting those clutch hits in the fifth, sixth, seventh innings. And that's been the big prime area where they've had some opportunities and haven't capitalized.
Yeah, and the pitching was so taxed this week that we even saw them used without a lead just to keep the game close. I think Xavier Martinez pitched the eighth in the game on Friday against Sac State before, you know, Jared Fikus gave up a couple runs in the ninth. We saw both of them on Sunday pitch without a lead just to keep it close. And I think that overall the pitching staff had a great week, especially because they had, you know, had to pitch five games in 6 days with Caden Aoki still on the mend, and you know, with 40 games under your belt. I thought the pitching staff had a great week outside of that game against Santa Clara. The 12 runs stick out like a sore thumb, but all the other four games, I thought the pitching staff did its job. I'll hone in on one reliever for my final three up. I'm going to talk about Fisher Johnson. He pitched on each of the first three games of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. He's now made 10 appearances this year since coming back from an injury. He's given up just one single run in three of those 10 appearances. He's gone two or more innings in five of those 10 appearances. He's got a 1.59 ERA and 17 innings pitched. And the big thing for me is, as a guy that pitches to contact, he gave up 45 hits last year and, you know, just over 40 innings. This season, he's given up 10 hits in 17 innings. He's never going to be a guy that strikes guys out. But when you pitch to contact and you're not giving up hits and not giving up runs, like, you are doing your job. And I think Fisher Johnson has really done that as kind of one of those bridge arms Andy Stankiewicz talked about before the year.
Yeah, and he's not getting hit hard. He's a guy that pitches to contact. He's a sinker baller. He's going to get ground balls, but it's not like it's, you know, guys are hitting the ball hard and they're just right at people. He's pitching and it's weak contact, ton of ground balls and whatnot. So he's been outstanding for him as well. The key is just getting it to those guys in the back end and, you know, finding the guys to get there, because the starting pitching continues to be whoop, 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 whoop. It's kind of a, you know, seesaw up and down here. William Watson was really good 2 weeks ago. I even got a glowing review from one of the staff members at Oregon. They were just like, whoa, where did this guy come from? You know, that was not what we were expecting. And then he was just kind of okay this week. I felt like the parts I watched, he gave up four runs to Sacramento State, and his pitch count was super elevated in the, you know, I think you guys talked about it, the third or fourth inning. He's like, I think he was up to 80 pitches in the fourth inning. Like,
he had a 40 plus pitch inning.
Yeah, and you're wondering, are they going to keep – and they kept rolling with him and he had a great – I think if I remember correctly, he had a great fifth inning, so to close it out. But, you know, they're rolling with him because of how many games and how many days and all that type of stuff. So it was up and down there. Could have been better. you're going to get some ups and downs, I think, from your Sunday guy, but you need your Friday, Saturday guys. And Strasburg was really good until his last pitch. And Eric Hammond didn't start this weekend. And when he came in, it didn't pitch very well. So that's a big enigma as well. So can you get Caden Aoki back? And if William Watson can continue to build, then I think you feel okay with the starting pitching, but it's still a big question mark every game. I feel like you go in. It's not like it's a confidence point. It's a, okay, let's see what we get. And we feel kind of confident in it. We're excited about the potential, but it might not go well. We'll see.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel bad for some of the starters that have gone this week because I think they were asked to do a lot. When we talk about Tyler Strom's work, and I'm going to talk about him in a second, had a great start. He made one error himself, but, you know, he if USC makes the play on defense, he is through six innings, I think it is, one earned run, and said he's asked to get one more out, and then he gives up the home run. Garen Rizzo almost goes a career high, five innings on Tuesday. Then USC has to bring him in, from the bullpen on Saturday after he, you know, almost threw a career high on Tuesday and he gets shelled. I think he gave up five earned runs, only got one out. But it's like these guys are being asked to do so much this week because of the way that the schedule worked out and, you know, because Caden Aoki's down. And you obviously can't plan for that. But as a pitching staff this late in the season, I thought there were a lot of positives and the starting pitching had some good outings. It's just you look back on the week and especially with a 2-3 record, you can kind of get tamped down a little bit. But my first three down, Shotgun, I just said forward pace. I was looking into it. This was USC's first losing week since they went to Globe Life Field. That was back at the end of February and the start of March. They went 0-4 that week, but for every week since, they've either been at 500 or above 500. But going 2-3 this week is kind of the first time that they haven't kept moving forward, because even with a 500 week, with where they started the season, that helps the record, that moves them forward up in the standings, that helps them in the RPI. This week was the first one that we've really seen them take a step back since that really terrible start to the year.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that kind of goes to my first one, which is at-large legitimacy. You still feel like there was an outside chance, and the bubble is very wide right now. And, looking at the needs report, we'll talk about this a little bit later in the where they stand, but there's still a possibility that they can make it to the top 45. It is, they would have to play perfect baseball, and they have not done that. So there's no belief in from us that that's going to happen. But before this week, it felt like there's still a chance. They could go 14-4 down the stretch, or they could do something like that and didn't feel unobtainable. But the last 2 weeks have really put a damper on that, even though after the great stretch that they had, with the wins over UC Irvine, the wins over Oregon State, now it's definitely the at-large legitimacy is three down.
Yeah, my second one is offensive consistency. We touched on it, so I'm not going to harp on it, but you score two runs on Tuesday. You respond with a season-high 16 hits on Wednesday, so you're thinking, okay, we found our groove. Three runs on Friday. Then you reset the season-high hits record with 17 on Saturday, back to four runs on Sunday. Team just couldn't find a groove offensively this week.
Yeah, mine is clutch hitting, so in a similar vein, coming up with in the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and getting that big hit didn't really happen this week.
And then my final one, I said Tyler Stromsborg's record. I think he has really turned things around for his season. I mean, his ERA is down to 4.3. Shotgun, his record is 2-7. And this is why you don't point to record anymore for judging a pitcher. That's an antiquated way to look at pitching, in my opinion. But he didn't give up an earned run on Friday, and he got the loss. Now, one of the unearned runs, I still think it's his fault because he made a throwing error and that made it an unearned run. Yep. But in reality, if Ethan Hedges and Dean Carpentier link up and they make the play on the throw from third, he would have been six innings, one earned run. I believe he would have been in line for a win, not a loss, but he gets a loss, because the defense let him down a bit. And, 2-7, despite a 4.34 ERA, it's brutal, Shotgun.
Yeah, definitely. It's a terrible record there, and he's pitched much better recently. The entire month of April, he's been much better outside of that pitch. That one pitch was just awful, and, that's a game changer for him. And, you could have got out with only one unearned run, but I'm still of the opinion, and I don't know where you stand on this, as a former pitcher, I'm still of the opinion that my ERA should factor in my fielding as well. And if you make your own error, then it should count towards your earned runs. And I know that the the argument there is that it's not measuring the pitching then, it's measuring the fielding. I don't care. You're a pitcher. You're an athlete. Mm-hmm. Go be an athlete. Yeah, he flubbed a ball that was right back to him. I think he spiked it. Remember, he spiked it the second or third.
It was interesting because it was first and second, nobody out. He got it. It was a bunt, I think, right back to him. He mm-hmm. could have thrown it anywhere on the diamond. He probably had time to throw it to short and then have the shortstop throw it to third if he wanted. I think thought about going to second to get the double play, but because, you know, he could have gotten the out at third, he decided to, I think, get rid of that idea and throw it to third. He still had time and he just rushed it and threw it in the dirt. And then there was a ground ball right past his glove where you could tell he was so ready to field it and come home with it. It just was hit hard enough that it ended up being a double play, but you could tell that he wanted the opportunity to make up for it and maybe get the 4-1 double play.
My final three down is Jacob Galloway, just 2-for-27 dating back to the start of the Oregon series. Now, he's carried the offense much of the season, and they had started rolling because other guys had started hitting leading into that Oregon series. Now that he's not hitting, they've taken a backslide, and shows how valuable he has been this season, because what they've done the last 2 weeks – they've gone, what, 3 and started since the start of that Oregon series, they're now 3-5. So, you know, with him not hitting, it changes the whole dynamic there in the top of the lineup. So got to get him back on track. And you feel bad that, you know, he had a couple of opportunities and couldn't come through for him in that, when he's been so good for him all season. There haven't been guys on base a lot of times for him when he's come up to bat.
Yeah, and you can just tell the at-bats look a little bit different. I don't know if he's in his head or something. Or, you know, when you're hitting like he had been for the entire season and you do start to slump, I'm sure it feels even weirder for that, because, you know, Austin O'Vern slumped to start the year. We talked to him about that, and he's like, immediately, he's like, something's wrong. But when you're hitting as a 400 hitter for the majority of the year and you go hitless in a game, then it just feels even weirder. So you could tell that the at-bats were a little bit different. You know, he was striking out a little bit more often, almost falling behind 0-2 in every count, which, you know, he can work himself out of, but we've just seen him take such great at-bats, work counts. Pitchers seem to be afraid to pitch to him, and it just felt a little bit different over the last couple of weeks. And I think you and I know that he will bounce back at some point, but everyone goes through a slump. It's just weird to see your best hitter go through a slump.
Yeah, inopportune time as well with where they're at and how valuable all these games have been because they put themselves in such a big hole. With that, we're going to take a moment to pause. We'll take our break. Jack and I'll return. We'll look at the, you know, where USC stands. We'll preview the upcoming week, and then we'll get out of here. No guests this week. We'll get one back next week. We'll get back on track here. My voice is going here. It's been a long day. A lot of podcasting. Spring game. Once we're here, calm down the schedule when men's basketball stops getting 19 commits in 3 days, and you know, everything else is going on as well. So we'll get back to our regular. But first, we're going to take a break now, and we'll come back and preview this upcoming week.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure to put the Dado download, Jack and Shotgun, the baseball pod, whatever it takes in the headline. Make sure it gets directed to us. We really appreciate it when you guys send in things and submit. Love all those. And we'll do a Q&A podcast at the end of the season or something. Make sure we answer all your guys' questions about how the season kind of transpired and whatnot. But let's look at where they stand right now, Jack. USC is currently 19-21. Now, they've been flirting on this line of being at 500, one game below 500, but now they're back to two games under 500. They are still 10-7 in Pac-12 play. And that is notable because the Pac-12 is just like flipped on its head this past weekend. Stanford takes a series from Oregon. They blow out Oregon on Sunday to win that game. I think they blew them out on Friday too. All three games in that series were blowouts, if I remember correctly. But they take the series there. And Cal is suddenly playing great again. They've been either top shelf or bottom shelf this entire season. And they went through a big slump and fell behind in the Pac-12, but they have won 8 games in a row, including sweeping Oregon State. They walked off Bridger Holmes twice. They won all three games by a run. So the Pac-12 is now super bunched up outside of Arizona, because Arizona is white hot right now. They had won 11 in a row, I believe it was. They lost a midweek to Grand Canyon. They come back. They sweep Washington State in some ridiculous ways. And this is what has been the case for Arizona the last month or so, is they just keep finding ways to win. The game on Friday, they're down to, I think, their last out, and the Washington State outfielder just drops a fly ball and ends up, the tying run comes in, they end up winning in extra innings. This is the type of stuff that seems to be happening. Last week it was, or 2 weeks ago, when they played Louisiana Tech last weekend, they were down by 5 going into the ninth, I think it was, and they rallied back to win that. Like, they're finding ways to win. And that's the difference in a team that is together and is playing really good baseball, and a team like USC, who seems to be finding ways to not get over the hump at times. So, and I don't think there's a huge talent disparity between Arizona and USC. I just think that Arizona's kind of got it this year and USC doesn't. And, you know, their guys come up clutch when they need to. Mason White comes through with a hit. Brendan Summerhill comes through with a hit. Those guys in particular, those two seem like they're always a part of the late inning festivities. And Arizona is now 13-5 in Pac-12 play. So they've got a 2-game lead on the entire conference. But after that, you got Oregon and Utah at 11-7. They're 2 games back. USC and Oregon State, by virtue of not playing that Sunday game, have 1 game fewer. They're both at 10-7. So USC is technically tied for fourth place. They would have the tiebreaker there. So USC right now is the fourth place team. And then you got Cal, who's 3.5 back, Stanford at 4, Arizona State at 4.5. USC will play Arizona State this weekend. But so you have, what is that? More than half the conference, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams are all bunched up within 2.5 games of each other, all chasing Arizona. And who knows if suddenly it's not like Arizona is just beating the brakes off people. They're finding ways to win. Finding ways to win can go cold real fast. You know, you don't get a drop fly ball from Washington State. You don't win an extra innings, those type of things. And suddenly you lose 4 or 5 games or something like that. So they can quickly come back to the pack as well. And it's super important for USC because there's probably going to be four, maybe five teams get into the NCAA tournament. Cal really raised their stock by, you know, their weekend over Oregon State. Right now, Arizona and Oregon State and Utah are the locks right now. Oregon's on the bubble. Their RPI is not great because they played four games against Seattle and four games against somebody else that's terrible and has just destroyed their RPI, even though they're a really good team. But it's important for USC, not because of RPI, not because of anything else, is seeding for the Pac-12 tournament. The better seed you have, the better opportunity you have to advance. Last year we saw with the new format where each team plays, you know, you're in a pot of three teams, you play each of the other two teams. We saw Stanford win their first game and then basically punt their second game because as the number one seed, as long as they won one game, they were advancing no matter because there is a wild card as well. So if USC can climb the ranks, that gives them that much better of an opportunity to advance in the Pac-12 tournament to the championship round. And then, you know, it's one game for a chance to make it to a regional. So huge for USC to keep climbing the ranks. So they had a terrible week this week. A bad week, you know, not necessarily terrible, a very bad week. But it didn't hurt them in the Pac-12 standings. Their RPI chances are bust right now. Now you just got to focus on the Pac-12. What can you do to push yourself up? And so right now, USC 19-21 overall, but 10-7 in Pac-12 play and still within striking distance of Arizona and everyone else that we just mentioned in that bunch.
Yeah, and of the six teams that are above 500 in Pac-12 play, and the Pac-12 tournament is 10 times more important for USC than any of those other teams. Here are the win percentages overall of the six teams, and I want you to tell me which one's the outlier. 63%, 69%, 68%, 76%, 47%, 63%. USC is below 500 on the season. You know, Stanford is right there at 9-9, and they're kind of a similar 45% overall. But of those contenders that are within 3.5 games and above 500 in Pac-12 play, basically all of them have much better chances for USC to potentially get an at-large bid. So the Trojans need the Pac-12 tournament more than anyone to try and get into the NCAA tournament. And one of the interesting things, Shotgun, is they have played three of the four teams above them. The series that they have remaining in the Pac-12 all come from teams that are below them right now in the standings or Utah, who Trojans are a half game back of. So they have, if you want to look at it this way, played the harder teams. Now they get the quote unquote easier teams, although we've seen the Pac-12 this year. It's kind of cannibalizing itself. Anything can happen in any weekend, but they have mostly gotten through the minefields on the Pac-12 schedule. But the question is, like, can USC go on the road and beat one of these worst teams? Can they get that hit to make sure that they win a series against these teams that are below them in the standings? That's going to be the big question. And getting into the schedule for this week, it's a midweek game. The Trojans absolutely have to win. Like, absolutely need to win. 13-24 Cal State Fullerton. It will be at Fullerton, but there's a team that's 9-12 at home. They've won 35% of their games, 5-13 in the conference. Trojans need to beat Fullerton. I don't think that there's any debate about that. And then they go on the road where they still haven't been great this year. And they of course, lost that series to Oregon. But they go to Arizona State, a team that I was ready to completely write off in the Pac-12. But shotgun, they just swept UCLA. Now they're 10-11 in Pac-12 play. They've won, you know, they're 20-21 overall. So records wise, looks up like a very similar team to USC. But the way they've got there has been very different.
Yeah. And UCLA is just, they're not playing at all right now. They're pretty much done. Washington, I don't mind that team, but they're not finding ways to win. They did win one at Utah, but got blown out in one of the games. So those two teams, and then Washington State getting swept by Arizona when they were in all three games. Now, Washington State's going to be a tough task, USC to go to. But those three teams between them, USC is going to finish better than two of them. So USC is at this point, pretty much locked into making the Pac-12 tournament. I don't think UCLA or Washington will be able to catch USC. So they're at least going to make the tournament. That's a positive. Remember, there were times when we didn't know if that was going to happen. Let's real quick look at their RPI and everything, just to see where they're at. Their RPI is at 91. And, you know, That's from where it was, what, 2 weeks ago or whatever?
Yeah.
So you say, ah, whatever. They were up to 69 after the Irvine win. You know, so that's 15, maybe 20 spots away from being an at-large team. And they climbed. They were at 160 about a month ago. Mm-hmm. So they climbed a ton of spots. And after they climbed, you know, they're up about 10 spots after the UC Irvine win. But it came crashing back down after that. You know, the loss to Sacramento State, you know, they fell like 12, 15 spots after that loss on Friday. And then it just continued to slide to back down to the 90s. So those two losses were huge for them. So RPI is almost for certain shot. Now, I will say Boys World, the Boys World website has a what is called a needs report. What do you need to do to get to the top 45, which is usually at-large contention? What do you need to do to get to top 32, which is pretty much a lock for at-large? What do you need to do to get top 16, which is hosting, top 8, to be a national seed? So it has a threshold. What do you need? What games do you need to do? Or what do you need to do in your games remaining? A couple weeks ago, or last week, USC had about a 4-game buffer where they could lose a couple games. Now they have 7 games at home remaining, 9 games on the road. It says for them to make it into the top 45, there is still a chance if they basically go undefeated. You know, if they win 7 home games, 8 road games, then it feels like they can get in the top 45. Now, this all depends on all the other games around the country and how everything, but there's the, you know, a prediction that if they go undefeated, they can make it in the top 45. If they go undefeated, you know, for what is it? What did I say? 16 games. You know, if you're suddenly 35-21, that resume looks a lot different. So if that were to happen, sure, they could be an at-large team. We don't predict that to happen, though.
I mean, the team hasn't been above 500 at any point this year. So 35-21 would be a remarkable turnaround.
Yeah. And then the DSR, the Diamond Sports Ranking that we've devised with at D1 Baseball, along with the 643 charts people, has them at 61. They had been up to notes that I had them up to before the Sacramento State loss. They were at 52, so they're right in the bubble contention with a strong weekend. They probably move up a few spots. You know, wouldn't get a big bump from Sacramento State and Santa Clara, but probably would have been at 48, 49. And that's the difference. You backslide now and you got that much bigger of a hole to figure out. But who, I don't think the committee is necessarily going to use DSR. It's just another tool potentially for them to use. But that should, we think it's a little bit more accurate than the RPI and it can be manipulated a little bit less than the RPI. But it also said, I believe you had in our notes here, that their loss Friday was their worst of the season. And I think with it, it probably is in the grand scheme of things, you look at it and who they've lost to, like the LMU loss is probably the worst just as far as what the LMU team is now. But LMU was playing a little bit better early in the season. So I think that is taken into consideration in the DSR. So I think that's part of the reason why the Sacramento State, like you have all this momentum and it's just a crushing loss for them. So I think it probably is their worst loss, you know, not necessarily in the grand, looking at just the looking at the schedule overall, but in the grand scheme of things of the impact of that loss, I probably is the worst loss for them.
Yeah, and I will give credit to Sacramento State too. Like Sacramento State's playing really good baseball right now, but you're right, Chuck. And I think if you're talking about timing, it's maybe the most impactful loss.
Yeah. So USC, like you said, they'll go to Cal State Fullerton. Got to take care of business there. Fullerton is not playing well. They don't have a ton of talent. They're not the Fullerton of old. So they got to go take care of business there. You know, they played them earlier this season. They beat them. They got to do it again. Cal State Fullerton's now 13-24. They're just 5-13 in the Big West. They got swept by CSUN over the weekend. You know, they did take one game from Arizona State. They played 2 games last week. And what used to be a common rivalry in the postseason, Arizona State and Cal State Fullerton used to face off in super regionals, it seemed like over and over and over. Those two teams were like 20 games under 500 or something going into that, or 10 games under 500. It's just mind-blowing when they were playing each other. But then USC will play Arizona State as well. And the Sun Devils have talent, especially on the offensive side. A guy like Isaiah Jackson, amazing SportsCenter top 10 play, robbed a home run way over the wall from John Vons, the UCLA linebacker / safety, younger brother of Tyler Vons, former USC wide receiver. Hits a ball to center field. Isaiah Jackson robs it. Isaiah Jackson, to me, is the linchpin in this lineup. He's only batting 230. I saw him at the beginning of the year, and he got off to a huge start when he's going, it changes everything for the lineup because it just makes him that much deeper. But he hasn't really been going. Nick McClain, Matt McClain's younger brother from UCLA, he's only hitting 246. They expected more out of him this season. You know, Harris Williams is a transfer from San Francisco. They expected big things out of. They've gotten some consistency out of Ryan Campos is one of the more underrated catchers on the West Coast. He is a great hitter. He is a wall back behind the backstop. He's a smaller guy, similar to Jacob Galloway, but he has some thump a little bit there. And then Jacob Tobias is a bad body first baseman that, you know, just he hits the ball the other way. Just everything. He just hits everything hard, basically. He just hit line drive all over the park. And he can also hit it out of the park as well. And then a guy that's come on for them, Keon Vu, has been red hot recently. He's batting 449 for the season. He hasn't played as much as a lot of guys, but he's got 6 homers and 26 RBIs. Those are the guys that really stand out. Nua Contreras, I think, is still going to be out for them. He's their third baseman. He is a guy that has a lot of talent as well, but he's been down for a bit. The bats, if you can keep the bats in check, which is always a challenge in the desert, if you can keep the bats in check, you can beat up on their pitching. That's the big thing. They have a couple of quality arms. Connor Markle has been their most consistent guy. A transfer from Grand Canyon, a lefty, has been on Saturdays for them. But outside of that, it's been a very up and down, wishy-washy this season. Thomas Burns is a freshman who started on Fridays for them at times this season. He's got decent numbers, but he's only started 6 games. I don't think he started this past weekend. So, I think that he's been out fresh. He's been out since March 22nd. So, you know, that's one of the things. They've been banged up as well in the bullpen. They got a nasty lefty at the end of the game, if they can get to him, if they're still using him in that same role, Cole Carlin. But they can't usually get to him. They have struggled to hold leads, and Carlin actually may have gotten a couple starts recently too. So, they've got some pieces, but it's a very winnable series. It's a series that USC needs to take care of business if they want any chance to really make some noise.
Yeah, the one other bat I'd highlight, Brandon Compton. He leads the team, I believe, in OPS, but he only played one of the games against UCLA, so that's something to look for. A guy is hitting .315 this season. He's got 7 homers, 30 runs batted in. And shotgun, the pitching is kind of the story, especially earlier in the season. The discrepancy was a lot bigger between the bats and the arms, where like the offense was going crazy, and the pitching still was losing games. The ERA right now it's a little bit better, but it's still 6.6. So it is a very similar team to what we see sometimes out there in the desert. It's like offense is going crazy. Pitching, you can beat up on. It might be a who can put up gaudier numbers, bigger innings, more runs throughout the weekend. It could be a series like that. Or you could see, USC just play well offensively and the pitching continues to roll. But I think it's going to be like one of those desert series. If you remember the one that USC played last year at Arizona, it could be a lighter version of that where it was just a whole lot of offense and the Wildcats just scored more runs. That was also at the end of the year and, wasn't a great series for USC considering the way the season was going. But this is a week where USC has to go 3-1 or 4-0. And it's tough to sweep on the road, but we mentioned they kind of have to be perfect. And even if they want to just continue to rise the ranks in the Pac-12 and get closer to having a higher seed and a better seed in the Pac-12 tournament, you have to take 2 or 3 from Arizona State. This is a series you can't lose. You have to win it, and then a sweep would be great. And you could easily see USC sweep this one, but because of how bad Fullerton is, they've lost 5 of 6. And even with Arizona State streaking a little bit, they've won 5 of 7. This is a week where USC has to be above that .500 line.
Yeah, and another thing with Arizona State's pitching is they walk a ton of guys. You got to be patient at the plate this week for you if you're USC. Don't expand the zone. Don't help them out at all. Outside of Matt Teeting, who's an experienced arm but doesn't necessarily have the stuff, they walked a ton of guys early in the season. I just looked at the weather. The good news for USC is right now it's currently 94 degrees in Arizona. It's 98 high on Monday, 97 on Tuesday. This weekend, though, down to 83, 81, and those, it gets down into the 60s at night. So USC on Friday should be playing, a little bit tempered. It's not going to be that the launching pad like it was at Arizona the final weekend of the regular season last year. And then Sunday, it's going to warm back up a little bit. Should be for a day game, it should be mid 80s to the high 80s. So But I think that's a positive for USC because USC, you know, I think they play better in a more temperate climate than necessarily the heat and the ball flying everywhere. So we'll see, though. It's another weekend where they just need to take care of business. I won't even call it a big week because of where they're at now after the last weekend. But, you know, they just got to take care of business.
It's a get back week, and you should be concerned if they don't get back on track. That's how I would put it.
Yeah, and you know, this season is, can you keep it from spiraling after last week and the loss to Oregon, where you had some momentum? You lose a series to Oregon last week. Things don't go your way. Does the season start spiraling on them, or can they turn things around, play better baseball? That's the big thing. Can you start playing your best baseball by the time you get to Scottsdale in a month? If you can, you give yourself a chance. You can go out and make some noise. You know, you play good for 4 days in a row, and suddenly you're or 3 days off for a day, and then a championship game. But the way the Pac-12 tournament is set up, but you play good for 4 days, and suddenly you can find yourself in the NCAA tournament, and then anything can happen. So we've seen in the past, it was 2 years ago when Ole Miss won it. They were the last team to get in, and they end up winning their last one standing. So getting in the dance is the biggest thing for USC right now. So the biggest thing is just, can you start playing your best baseball down the stretch so that when you go to Scottsdale, you have an opportunity to play well in the Pac-12 tournament?
Yeah, and you know, we may be saying on the podcast, USC's at-large chances are done. Even though you mentioned, hey, they got to go undefeated, probably not going to happen. You know they're over there in the clubhouse. Andy Stankiewicz and Travis Jewett are saying, hey, window's still open. Why don't you guys go win all these games? You know, why can't we go undefeated? Why can't we get an at-large bid, prove everyone wrong? Why can't we go win the Pac-12 tournament, make it in, and then be the last one standing? You know, we look at it through a more maybe objective lens, but, you know, they're in there trying to hype the guys up and get them to go into this week and go 4-0 this week and 5-0 the next week and what, you know, go on and on and on until the season ends.
Yeah, they should worry about getting to 500 first. And
that's probably a good
bet. If they go 3-1 this week, they'll be back at 500. If they can sweep the week, then they would actually get above 500 for the first time this season. We'll see if that can happen. But that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to my co-host, Jack Smith. And we hope to see you guys in the future. Hope you can listen to us for the next episode. Make sure you're liking, sharing, subscribing, leave us a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. We appreciate all of that. We love you. We hope that you have a great week, and we'll see what the Trojans can do this week at Fullerton and at Arizona State.